Blog Talk Radio.
Belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man. Thomas Paine.
The way to see by faith is to shut the eye of reason. Benjamin Franklin.
The question before the human race is whether the God of nature shall govern the world by his own laws, or whether priests and kings shall rule by fictitious miracles. John Adams.
Every person is accountable for themselves. Elihu Palmer.
In deism, our reason and our belief are happily united. Thomas Paine.
It is perfectly evident to my mind that there exists a necessary, eternal, supreme, and intelligent being. This is no matter of faith, but of reason. Voltaire.
God gave us reason, not religion. This belief is known as deism. In partnership with GodDiscussion.com, the following presentation comes from the World Union of Deists.
Hello, everyone. This is Jason X. I am the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists. And I'm so glad you can join us here for our very first live call-in podcast from the World Union of Deists. I want to see if I've got other people online helping me or not. Hello there, the person with a 425 area code. Can you hear me? Well, maybe not.
Yes. Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi, who is this?
It's Bob.
Oh, hi, Bob. Didn't recognize your number. Bob, of course, is the founder and director of the World Union of Deists. And I'm glad to have him here. He's going to be running the chat room because I have trouble walking and chewing gum at the same time. There's no way I'm going to host a show and monitor the chat. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Okay, but I think you have me mixed up with another Bob. I responded because I do have a 425 area code.
Oh, well, Bob, why don't you tell me about yourself? There's Bob Johnson, who I was expecting to run the chat room. Who are you?
I'm Bob Bridges.
Oh, hi, Bob Bridges. And what can you tell me about yourself?
Well, I was given your number. I've pretty much considered myself a deist for a long time, and I was given the number for the call-in because I'm also a student of history and economics and other things, spiritualism, various aspects of life, and Thomas Jefferson is one of my heroes that I look up to, and so I thought I would tune in and see what you guys had to say. I know that the Founding Fathers were primarily deists rather than Christians or any particular faith, although some had religious ties.
Yes, well, all of them had religious ties, but many of the key ones were definitely deists. Well, Bob,
right.
how about I put you on hold and then start with my program? I'm going to be talking about Thomas Jefferson, as you said, and
okay.
Then I'll see if you want to input to the program.
But and so if nobody else will help you out, I will.
I appreciate that, Bob. We deists have to stick together.
Okay.
All right. Well, let me tell you how this all came to be. As the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists, I answer emails from all around the world, and some of them are very interesting. There was a very intelligent Christian who emailed me, and he was trying to convince me that Thomas Jefferson was a Christian and that he was not a deist at all. And this went against everything that I knew and believed, but I had to really research to find quotes that would convince him. Now, I should start off by defining some terms. I define a small old Orthodox Christian as a Christian who believes in the Trinity, the Incarnation, the Atonement, the Resurrection, the Ascension, the Second Coming, the General Resurrection, eternal heaven for the righteous, and eternal hell for the unrighteous. I defined a fundamentalist Christian as a Christian who believes that the entire Bible is true. All literal assertions of the Bible are literally true, and all figurative assertions of the Bible are figuratively true. Please note that an Orthodox Christian can be a fundamentalist Christian and vice versa. However, an Orthodox Christian is not necessarily a fundamentalist Christian, but a fundamentalist Christian is probably an Orthodox Christian. And I say that because there are a lot of Christians who believe in things like the Trinity and the Incarnation, but don't necessarily believe that everything in the Bible is true. Well, anyway, I was able to find some great quotations from Thomas Jefferson. He wrote a lot about religion, and I've got three quotations here in which Jefferson specifically rejected the doctrine of the Trinity. It's difficult to be a Christian if you don't believe in the Trinity. And here's what Thomas Jefferson said in a letter to John Adams written in 1803. It is too late in the day for men of sincerity to pretend they believe in the Platonic mysticisms that three are one and one is three, and yet that the one is not three and the three are not one, but this constitutes the craft, the power, and the profits of the priests. Interesting stuff, I'd say. And here's another one. The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man. But compare with these the demoralizing dogmas of Calvin. One, that there are three gods. Two, that good works or the love of our neighbor is nothing. Three, that faith is everything. And the more incomprehensible the proposition, the more merit the faith. Four, that reason in religion is of unlawful use. Five, that God from the beginning elected certain individuals to be saved and certain others to be damned, and that no crimes of the former can damn them, and no virtues of the latter save. That's from Thomas Jefferson to Benjamin Waterhouse, June 26, 1822. And the last one I'm going to read before I try to get back with Bob here is the metaphysical insanities of Athanasius, of Loyola, and of Calvin are, to my understanding, mere lapses into polytheism, differing from paganism only in being more unintelligible. Thomas Jefferson, letter to Jared Sparks, 1820. Hello, Bob. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Great. So what did you think about those words?
Pretty interesting. And I've read some other quotes from Jefferson and other founding fathers basically calling religions the scourge of the earth.
Right. Yeah, Adams had quite a few, although he was a Unitarian Christian, and Franklin was a little more tactful, but if you go to Thomas Paine, he's got a whole book that really criticizes the Bible. Have you read The Age of Reason?
I have not. I'm familiar with it. I've read quotes from it.
Well, it's an amazing book. Bob Johnson, the founder of the World Union of Deists, he was a devout Christian when he started reading it, and he threw it down in anger because it was just upsetting his worldview so much, but then he picked it up, he kept on reading, and after reading that, he became a deist. Well, I guess maybe we should have some more of these quotations from Jefferson, but before we go there, I just want to say that once again, this is Jason X here, and I'm the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists. We would love to have you call in at 914-338-0452. The World Union of Deists is an educational organization dedicated to teaching the world about deism so that humanity will be as sane, good, and happy as possible. Our website address is www.deism.com. That's www.deism.com. All right, here come some more quotations from Jefferson. Jefferson believed that Jesus of Nazareth was a mere human being, not the only begotten Son of God. He believed that Jesus was a great teacher of theology and morality. In other words, Jefferson believed in the disbelieved in the doctrine of the Incarnation. So he definitely was not a fundamentalist Christian or an Orthodox Christian, because the doctrine of the Incarnation is clearly taught in the Bible, and it's one of the things that one has to believe to be an Orthodox Christian. Here are Jefferson's words. But the greatest of all reformers of the depraved religion of his own country was Jesus of Nazareth. Abstracting what is really his from the rubbish in which it is buried, easily distinguished by its luster from the dross of his biographers, and as separable from that as the diamond from the dunghill, we have the outlines of a system of the most sublime morality which has ever fallen from the lips of man. The establishment of the innocent and genuine character of this benevolent morality, and the rescuing it from the imputation of imposture which has resulted from artificial systems invented by ultra-Christian sects. The Immaculate Conception of Jesus, his deification, the creation of the world by him, his miraculous powers, his resurrection and visible ascension, his corporeal presence in the Eucharist, the Trinity, original sin, atonement, regeneration, election, orders of hierarchy, etc., is the most desirable object. So getting rid of these beliefs is the most desirable of object, according to Thomas Jefferson in a letter to W. Short, October 31st, 1819. Got two more quotes about Jefferson rejecting the incarnation. Quote, "The office of reformer of the superstitions of a nation is ever more dangerous. Jesus had to work on the perilous confines of reason and religion, and a step to the right or left might place him within the grasp of the priests of this of the superstition, a bloodthirsty race as cruel and remorseless as the being whom they represented as the family of God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, and the God of Israel. That Jesus did not mean to impose himself on mankind as the Son of God, physically speaking." And this is in a letter to somebody by the name of Story. Couldn't figure out the last name. I'm sorry, the first name of this, I suppose, a Mr. Story, August 4th, 1820. Now, Thomas Jefferson believed, either rightly or wrongly, that Jesus of Nazareth was a deist. He believed that Jesus based all of his beliefs on reason and still concluded that God exists. That's what a deist is. But he believed that followers of Jesus, such as St. Paul, actually took Jesus' message and twisted it around. And so what Jefferson did was he read the Bible, we read the New Testament to be more specific, and that which he found good he attributed to Jesus of Nazareth, and that which he found bad he attributed to his wayward disciples. last quote about the incarnation from Jefferson. "The truth is that the greatest enemies of the doctrine of Jesus are those, calling themselves the expositors of them, who have perverted them to the structure of a system of fancy absolutely incomprehensible, without any foundation in his genuine words. And the day will come when the mystical generation of Jesus, by the Supreme Being as his father, in the womb of a virgin, will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter." That's Thomas Jefferson in a letter to John Adams, April 11th, 1823. Now, I should mention here that after they were both present, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson became even closer friends, and they continued to write to each other in letters into their old age. And these letters often had to do with religion. And Thomas Jefferson is gleefully proclaiming here that someday the mystical generation of Jesus, that means Jesus being born by God through the Holy Spirit and the Virgin Mary, in the womb of a virgin, will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter. I'm not an expert in Roman mythology, but I believe that Minerva is the Roman god of wisdom and Jupiter is the king of the gods. I guess that's like Athena and Zeus in Greek mythology. And I guess that there's some story about Minerva being born in the brain of Jupiter. And most people at Jefferson's day had rejected that by this time. And, of course, most people now reject that. And Jefferson is saying that, you know, the day is going to come soon when no one's going to believe in the incarnation of Jesus. They'll just think it's nonsense, like the story of Minerva and the brain of Jupiter. Do you have any thoughts on that, Bob Bridges? Still there, Bob?
I do, actually. I do.
Okay, let's hear him.
I personally contend that, you know, from my studies, that it's unlikely that Jesus, the man, actually even lived. And if you look at the story of the ancient Egypts with Horus, Isis, and Osiris, you'll find that it all comes out of the astrology, And astrology, you know, the three kings are the three stars of Orion's belt, which are still referred to as the three kings. The three-day death and resurrection has to do with the procession of the sun at the equinox. It sets or rises at a particular part in the horizon, and on the equinox, it ceases to migrate across the horizon and rises in the same spot for 3 days, and then it starts to reverse as the seasons change into the longer daytime versus nighttime. And virtually all of the stories of the crucifixion, the resurrection, 3 days, the Passover, all that stuff, all dates back to many, many religions before Christianity, and all comes out of the zodiac.
You know, the first time I was ever exposed to the idea may have been when I read The Age of Reason, and I think that you and Thomas Paine largely agree. Thomas Paine is this man who was smarter than me, so automatically I got to think, well, there's something to it. I happen to still believe that Jesus was a mere mortal who got mythologized the way that St. Nicholas got mythologized into Santa Claus. But the more I read of this stuff, like you're saying, Bob, the more I read that kind of thing, the more I think, there might be something to it. So I'm very much open to the possibility. And look at this. We got Deborah joining us. She writes, sorry I was late. There was a wreck on the highway. Well, Deborah, hopefully there's not a wreck on this podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I just cranked up the computer. I feel real bad for being late, but it sounds like you guys got everything working just fine.
Well, let me tell you what happened. Bob Bridges, a fine deist, wasn't expecting to co-host the show, but he called up, and I thought it was Bob Johnson, who was going to run the chat room for me. But Bob was having some technical issues, and it's just a big coincidence, and Bob Bridges has really contributed a lot to the show. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Excellent.
I guess, Bob, I'm just going to keep your mic on in case you ever want to interject anything. Am I putting you on the spot too much?
No, that's fine, and I'll just use my mute button to stay in the background until you need me.
All right, great. Well, you just say what you want to say. Well, Deborah, we've been talking about Thomas Jefferson not being an Orthodox or fundamentalist Christian, and I've proved that he rejected the doctrine of Trinity. He'd rejected the doctrine of the Trinity. Sorry, I'm from New York. I sometimes talk too fast. and that he believed that Jesus of Nazareth was a mere human being, not the only begotten Son of God. Do you have anything to say about those things?
Okay, let me throw in what David Barton was saying.
Okay.
I would love your humor on this. He was now I'm just paraphrasing here, so I may not have this correct. But my understanding is that he was saying that Jefferson took a lot of that out of the Bible, his beliefs about the Trinity and so forth, in order to convert Indians.
Well, I actually did some research on that, and it's not as – it turns out not to be as silly as it first sounds. Jefferson did two versions of what later became known as the Jeffersonian Bible.
Right.
And I saw in what looked like Jefferson's handwriting, because it was an image, and it did say something like, you know what, if you can talk, I can find it on my computer maybe.
I just got here, so I don't even know what the discussion was, you know.
I'll have to go from memory. For those who don't know, Thomas Jefferson took the four Gospels, and he took out everything miraculous in it, and he stitched all back together into one coherent narrative of the life and teachings of Jesus of Nazareth. And he considered this a great devotional tool in terms of promoting his own morality. Now, some Christians contend that he did this to convert the Indians. And, to convert them to what? It's a good question. It's certainly not converting them to Orthodox Christianity. Right. But there is, I did a little bit of research in there. There is a little bit to back that up in that in the first version he wrote something like, Jefferson wrote something like, the title was A Teaching Guide to Convert the Indians. But maybe he did that to cover his butt in case somebody found it. In the not too recent time before then, Christians would burn people at the stake for, you know, cutting up the gospel. So,
sure.
You know, Thomas Jefferson had to be careful. He was a political figure, so maybe he wrote that in the cover. He wrote that he was, in other parts, he wrote that he only created this book for his own personal use. So he actually contradicted himself.
That's what I understood. Yeah. I thought it was for his own personal thing and family, but I'm not a scholar on it like you are, so I just wanted to bring that up.
I'm only a half scholar. I've done enough research to realize, okay, it's not completely stupid for a Christian to say this, but Jefferson did write. He only used it for his own use, and once again, maybe it was done just to cover his, you know, himself politically, and help him out in case he got discovered. Here we got somebody sees liberty, and I'm going to try to talk to her or him. Hi, Sees Liberty.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
Fine. Who is this?
This is your buddy, Tim.
Tim. This is Tim Wingate?
That's right.
Hi, Tim Wingate. For those who don't know Tim Wingate, he is a contact person for the World Union of Deists, and he and I have done podcasts together on the website. So, Tim, have you been listening to the discussion?
Most of it. I'm trying to do the Skype here because, as you know, I have Magic Jack, and their magic platform charges money to contact something like a God discussion group or conference calling or something like that. So I thought, you know, I'm going to try the Skype, and turns out I needed to have a newer version installed. So I missed a little bit, about 10 minutes or so.
Well, we talked about some quotations in which Jefferson specifically rejected the Trinity, and he rejected the Incarnation. Just came in time for me to talk about that Jefferson believed that Orthodox Christians, such as St. Paul, have changed the religion of Jesus for the worse by adding miraculous nonsense to it. So you ready for some of those quotations?
Oh, go for it. You know how I feel about Paul.
Yeah. Maybe not always. Weren't you a minister at one point?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Yes.
Used to use him quite a bit for justifying keeping women in their place. Which didn't go over too well with my wife and daughters. And
yeah, you're not alone in that one.
Being a 21st century man, I listened to them.
That's good. We should evolve. All right. Once again, this is Jason. Go ahead.
Do you mind if I throw this one? Have you heard this latest about that Christian broadcaster who was saying that women who are on birth control have all kinds of dead babies inside their uterus?
Yeah.
Little tiny... dead fetuses.
The guy's an idiot. That's
all I can say. It sounds like he should run for Senate.
Well, you know, I saw a little thing on Facebook. Somebody, one of the various groups, had put up a little picture with this guy. But I'd like to know what his substantiation for that is. Yeah.
He said some doctors say, they always say just like, some doctors say.
Yeah, some doctors say, well, you know, this is why I like deism and reason, is because we can go to the science and we can find out. Name me the doctor who did the autopsy or did the hysterectomy and examined the womb. And let's find where this actually happened, if it's true. But most likely it's not. This is another one of these anecdotal stories, like all the healings that occur. I remember years back, James Randi tried to get Benny Hinn nailed down on people supposedly who had been healed, and Benny Hinn never could do it.
Oh, I love it.
And anyone who can do something miraculous in front of James Randi will get $1 million. It's like the James Randi challenge or something like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, anyways, once again, this is Jason X here along with my co-hosts, Bob Bridges, Deborah, and Tim Wingate. I am the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists. We would love to have you call in at 914-338-0452. The World Union of Deists is an educational organization dedicated to the teaching the world about deism so that humanity will be as sane, good, and happy as possible. Our website address is www.deism.com. That's www.deism.com. And without any more delay, here is part of a letter from Thomas Jefferson to Horatio Spafford, dated March 17, 1814. In every country, in every age, the priest has been hostile to liberty. He is always in alliance with the despot. They have perverted the purest religion ever preached to man into mystery and jargon, unintelligible to all mankind, and therefore the safer engine for their purpose. Thoughts, people?
Well, I agree with a lot of that because, you know, the Jefferson Bible, the main teachings of Christ, I agree with it. I think, you know, it's good stuff. It's good moral stuff. But when you start putting in all this magic and all the other stuff, you know, was that sort of to appease the pagans at that time and convert them to Christianity? Do you think that was part of it? Or
I suppose, you know, Jefferson would say that it was influenced by paganism and Platonism. We just read a quote earlier in the show in which he said, it is too late in the day for men of sincerity to pretend that they believe in the Platonic mysticisms that three are one and one is three. So there he's hinting that Christianity as taught by Jesus was much more pure, much more reasonable, and then it got corrupted as it got taught by other people.
Well, that it makes a lot of sense to me. And I mean, that's a whole other discussion, you know, the genesis of some of these supernatural teachings.
Yeah. Well, here is another one. It's a letter to S. Kercheval, dated 1810. But a short time elapsed after the death of the great reformer of the Jewish religion, namely Jesus of Nazareth, before his principles were departed from by those who professed to be his special servants and perverted into an engine for enslaving mankind and aggrandizing their oppressors in church and state. So Thomas Jefferson believed that the Jews had a very complicated religion that wasn't that good, and that Jesus tried to reform that. And then Jesus succeeded among some people, but shortly after his death, Jesus' own followers, people like St. Paul, twisted the religion into something that wasn't as good as Jesus intended.
Well, I'd have to agree with that. Can you hear me, Jason?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Why do you agree with that, Tim?
Well, the fact of the matter is, when you look at the theology that Jesus taught, providing, of course, you believe in the New Testament documents being accurate, reliable, and actually authored somehow by God. But you look at the theology that Jesus taught, and then you look at the theology that Paul taught, and it's a completely different kind of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would go along with that Paul twisted and misrepresented Christianity. Mm-hmm. Remember, Paul, according to his own words, supposedly, in the book of Acts and numerous of his other letters, he claimed that he was a right-wing fundamentalist authoritarian reactionary. He was a Pharisee of Pharisees, a protector of the truth and the true religion, and he was hunting down Christians.
Hello, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Jason, you need to press your yellow button there, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm learning how to work the doohickeys here. Sorry about that, Tim. Just keep on going for a minute. I'm going to see who's on this this one line.
Oh, okay. Well, the bottom line is that Paul considered himself a zealot, and he was a persecutor of this new Jewish cult that had arisen, and he was out there going after these guys. And he was real proud of that fact. And then he gets knocked, supposedly he sees a light, and he gets knocked off of his horse or his camel, falls on the ground, and thinks he hears a voice claiming it's Jesus who he's persecuting, and that he's blinded. And then he goes into town, and he's supposed to present himself, and everybody's freaking out and afraid because this guy who was persecuting him now all of a sudden claims he's on their side and he's blind. So they take care of him, and they shuffle him out of town, and he goes through a period of time where he doesn't even listen to the apostles. He goes off on supposedly on the he claimed he went on the backside of the desert for many years, and he had a vision. He was caught up into what he called was the third heaven, and he didn't know if he was even there or not. And he goes on to say that he was then personally instructed by Jesus. So this is where the revelation business comes in with the writings of Paul. And his writings are now the way it's supposed to be. And he goes back and talks to the apostles, and they kind of reluctantly go, okay, well, a lot of your stuff's hard to understand. We're not really sure. So, go ahead. Just you go and talk to the Gentiles. We'll take care of the Jews. And that's pretty much it. And as Paul is supposedly, now providing that this story is even true, because this is, I'm combining a lot of things from the book of Acts, Galatians, Ephesians, all these things in the New Testament. Basically what Paul ends up doing is changing the nature of Christianity, turning it to being more fundamentalist, more rule and law oriented, even though he kept claiming that the law was done away with, but yet it's not. And we end up with this whole concept of a very male dominated, patriarchal, sin based, punishment or punitive reacting type of religion. And so, yeah, Paul really did change the nature of Christianity, because if you just, as I said, if you just simply read Jefferson's Bible, primarily, and read what Jesus' teachings were, his philosophical teachings, you find that they actually are different from what Paul teaches. So I'm just trying to back up your point there and your quote, Jason.
All right, I appreciate that, Tim. And we have another guest on, Chris Rada. I may be mispronouncing this, but apparently she knows
she
Deborah.
She is the, and I say the in all caps with exclamation points, circling it, bold, underlined, the expert on Jefferson and the Indians and everything else. She's the author of Liars for Jesus, and she's written a counter book to Barton's Jefferson Lies. You guys are in for a treat with Chris. She is the best.
Well, then I'm going to put her on right now. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Thank you for your patience.
I know you were trying to talk about Jefferson and had a call.
I'm so glad. Woo. We were talking about Jefferson converting the Indians.
Yes, I tuned in just when you were talking about the Jefferson Bible and that cover page that says unembarrassed with matters of whatever for the use of Indians, and I was thinking, I've looked at that and honestly it doesn't look like it's in Jefferson's handwriting, and I know the explanation for that.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, Jefferson's grandson. Actually, there's a collection of papers. I believe they're called the Edgehill Papers, and they're put in with the papers of Thomas Jefferson, I believe, at the University of Virginia. And what those are, they were copied over by, I believe, one of Jefferson's grandson. And what I've been uncovering, and I will be eventually writing about all of this because it's fascinating, is that I think that Jefferson's grandchildren were complicit in the historical revisionism of the 1850s to improve Jefferson's image.
Yeah, because his image got slandered because he wasn't Orthodox Christian enough,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, when I wrote it's the first of what's going to be a seven-part series debunking chapter by chapter Barton's book about Jefferson, and I write in there about how if you read the writings of anybody from the when Jefferson was still alive and for several decades after, when there were enough people around that remembered Jefferson, like the real Jefferson, they attack him for being unreligious and for making the University of Virginia, completely devoid of religion and all of that. Then you get up to the 1850s, and there's a major shift, and that's when most of the historical revisionism about him started. And who was right in the middle of this were Jefferson's grandchildren.
Okay, that is fascinating. I got
and
the
also
full
another
title
theory,
of the revision right here, in case you're wondering. It's the philosophy of Jesus of Nazareth being extricated from the account of his life and the doctrines given by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, being an abridgment of the New Testament for the use of Indians, unembarrassed, which means uncomplicated, the matters of faith, of fact
right.
or faith beyond
yeah,
the level of the
comprehension.
So you're saying that Thomas Jefferson's son
right.
probably wrote that.
Well, it's a grandson, but it's something I'm not 100% sure of, but highly suspicious of at the moment. And also, there's another theory that someone posed quite a while ago, that by Indians, Jefferson, because he was doing this completely for his own use, nobody was ever going to see it, okay, that by Indians, he might have sarcastically been referring to the hypocritical Christians. Which is actually a pretty interesting thing, and it seems pretty plausible because, you know, even like Benjamin Rush, Jefferson's good friend, who was a devout Christian, founder of the Philadelphia, one of the founders of the Philadelphia Bible Society and all that, he wrote in his autobiography that the book that Jefferson recommended for teaching the Indians morals was Aesop's Fables. So if anyone would have wanted Jefferson to be recommending the Bible, it would have been Benjamin Rush, but Benjamin Rush said no, it was Aesop's Fables.
Interesting stuff.
Interesting tidbits.
yeah, important stuff to realize.
My head is full of them.
Well, what Chris does. Keep them coming, please.
Hey, Deborah, did you see my piece today? What, debunking Barton with apparently this story he's been telling on Glenn Beck's show about the because, you know, he wants not just teachers to be armed in school, but students also. Okay, the story he's been telling about back in the Old West in the 1850s, that someone came to shoot a teacher, but all the students pulled out their guns and stopped them. Turns out it's from a Louis L'Amour novel. I swear to God, Google it. I got it on my blog on FTB and on Huffington. Look on the Huffington Post books page, they put it, I think. Barton. I emailed him and said, and the title is Barton getting from his quote history from Louis L'Amour novels now. And I emailed Barton and said that, you know, because someone pointed this out in the comments of a post I wrote last week debunking Barton's Second Amendment book. So I challenged Barton. I emailed him and said, you know, please give us the source for this because it's remarkably similar. So I have the email and everything in my post that's on Huffington Post now. So I think we've just busted Barton lifting his history from a freaking Old West novel.
Good work indeed.
Oh, is it on Facebook, Chris? I'll check it out.
If you go to my Facebook page, you can grab the link to either it's on HuffPo and it's also on my blog on FTV. Probably going to post it on like Alternate and a few other places tomorrow. But yeah, this was one of those like this is even bad for Barton.
Jason, Chris is she has worked so hard on she's the senior research director of Military Religious Freedom Foundation. But she's like the number one person who has researched Jefferson and then some of these false claims about him. As you've been pointing out, Chris, Jason has been pointing out some of the quotes from Jefferson tonight.
Yeah,
maybe.
Go ahead.
Well, I had there was a smart Christian argue with me saying that Jefferson was a Christian and as an Orthodox Christian, and then I
point out some quotations from the Trinity that show that he rejected the Trinity and that he rejected the incarnation. Now, I was about to move on to read some quotations in which Jefferson is theologically a deist and that he is morally a Christian, at least to an extent. That's how Jefferson considered himself Christian. He was morally a Christian.
Well, yeah, he thought of Jesus as a great philosopher, and he said in many letters, and this is another, it relates to the Jefferson Bible, too, because what I've also discovered is that the guy who wrote the introduction to the edition of the Jefferson Bible that was published by Congress in 1904, Cyrus Adler, I actually got all of his papers, copies of 200 and some odd pages of stuff from when he was writing the introduction to that. And he had all the quotes right, like the ones that they cut off now to say, like, where Jefferson will be saying, you know, the doctrines of Jesus is preached, blah, 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 the greatest in the world. And then like, where they'll cut off, but he was only Jefferson saying, but he was only human, and that's all he ever claimed to be. Well, where those quotes first started being misquoted to cut that stuff out was in the introduction to the Jefferson Bible by Cyrus Adler in 1904, but interestingly, in Cyrus Adler's notes, the full quotes are there.
Huh, so what was
so we have a bit
Cyrus
of a mystery.
What was his agenda?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, and he was Jewish, so it couldn't have been that he was a Christian nationalist, but I'm wondering if, because, you know, Jewish in 1904, not too many Jews had, like, he was, the head of, like, the Smithsonian or the Library of Congress or something, Library of Congress, I think, where his job might have been, because this guy, Cyrus Adler, was this historian that would go around the world just to make sure he had one little detail of something right. So it's totally out of character for him to have deliberately misquoted anything. It's almost like unfathomable, right? And yet, in this edition of the Jefferson Bible, when they first uncovered it and whatever, and it was published by Congress, the quotes are chopped off in the way that the revision is due today. And so I've been looking into this and have a few suspects among the congressmen of the time and all of that, this little mystery I've been working on of how and why the original butchering of those quotes happened in 1904 in that introduction by a guy who would never do something like that.
Well, it's
unless
definitely worth
an
article.
There was pressure on him.
Yeah,
it's one of those, like, you know, CSI Jefferson. No, I mean, I'm going back to all these.
Well, once again, this is Jason Eck here, along with my many co-hosts, and I am the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists. We would love to have you call in at 914-338-0452, the World Union of Deists. Is an educational organization dedicated to teaching the world about deism so that humanity will be as sane, good, and happy as possible. Our website address is www.deism.com. That's www.deism.com. And I'm going to read a quotation here from Jefferson that proves that he was theologically a deist. He says, in a letter to George Logan, dated November 12, 1816, when we see religion split into so many thousands of sects, and I may say Christianity itself divided into its thousands also, who are disputing, anathematizing, and where the laws permit, burning and torturing one another for abstractions which no one of them understand, and which are indeed beyond the comprehension of the human mind, into which the chambers of this bedlam would a man wish to thrust himself. The sum of all religion, as expressed by its best preacher, fear God and love thy neighbor, contains no mystery, needs no explanation, but this won't do. It gives no scope to making dupes. Priests could not live by it. Strong words, huh?
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to find the letter. There's a letter, I believe he wrote it to, was William Short, where he actually lists, he puts an asterisk in the letter, and he lists at the bottom of the letter everything in the Bible he doesn't believe. You're familiar with that letter?
I have a quotation here by him. By it to a letter to Short.
Read it.
Yeah, I got it. I got it, maybe. You want me to read what I've got here?
Yeah, see if it's, I'll know if it's the same letter.
Okay, well, in it, this a letter to W. Short dated 1820. It is not to be understood that I am with him, Jesus Christ, in all his doctrines. I am a materialist. He takes the side of spiritualism. He preaches the efficacy of repentance toward forgiveness of sins. I require a counterpoise of good works to redeem it. Among the sayings and discourses imputed to him by his biographers, I find many passages of fine imagination, correct morality, and the most lovely benevolence, and others, again, of so much ignorance, so much absurdity, and so much untruth, charlatanism, and imposture, as to denounce it impossible that such contradictions should have proceeded from the same being. I separate, therefore, the gold from the dross. Restore him to the former and leave the latter to the stupidity of some, the roguery of others of his disciples. Of this band of dupes and impostures, Paul was the great, and it's, the word is Corypheus. Corypheus, that means a leader of a chorus in Greek drama, or any leader or spokesman, and the first corrupter of the doctrines of Jesus. Was that the one you're thinking of, Deborah?
I think that...
No, of Chris. Chris is the one.
I think... Wait a second. Let me see if I can find it. I think it might be. But there's a... hang on.
Well, she's looking. We also have a toll-free number if people want to call. We just ask that people don't call to listen to the show, but if you want to call and comment, the toll-free is 888-238-0855 or 238-8529, sorry.
Let me see. It's one where Jefferson had an asterisk where he specifically listed. No, it's not that letter. It's
there's an asterisk here.
There was an asterisk in the letter, and then at the bottom of the letter, he listed all of the things, all of the miraculous things from the New Testament that he did not believe. I mean, it was a list of like 10 things that are like core beliefs of Christianity that anyone now looking at that would say, if you don't believe those things, you are not a Christian.
Oh, I read that one earlier.
You know the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I read it earlier. The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man, but compare these with the demoralizing dogmas of Calvin, and he lists a bunch of things that Orthodox Christians believe. But there's
not that one. This is an asterisk. Unless I find it, I won't bring it up because I'm going to take up all the time with it. But it is the letter that lists specifically all of the things in the New Testament that he does not believe. And I can't believe I can't remember exactly where this letter is. I'm usually better than that.
Well, while you're looking for it, I want to point out something in that last quotation I read. Thomas Jefferson wrote, Jesus preaches the efficacy of repentance toward forgiveness of sins. I require a counterpoise of good works to redeem it. So here's Jefferson disagreeing with Jesus. So obviously Jefferson did not believe that Jesus was God incarnate.
Oh, no. No, in more ways than he definitely disagreed, just like he did with certain things from other philosophers.
Right. And let's see here. Another quotation of Jesus that proves that he's theologically a deist is, shake off all the fears of servile prejudices under which weak minds are servilely crouched. Fix reason firmly in her seat and call on her tribunal for every fact, every opinion. Question with boldness even the existence of a God. Because there be one, he must approve of the homage of reason than the blindfolded than that of blindfolded fear. And that's to his nephew, Peter Carr, August 10th, 1787. I want to point out that deists base all their beliefs on reason, even their belief in the existence of God. Orthodox and fundamentalist Christians base many, if not all, of their theological beliefs on faith, which is the opposite of reason. So that proves that Jefferson was a deist and not an Orthodox or fundamentalist Christian.
Well, see, Jeff, David Barton uses that letter in his Jefferson book because he has to, because, you know, Glenn Beck adopted that question with boldness, even the existence of a God is like his, like, mantra, okay?
Uh-huh.
So Barton had to address that letter because, you know, Beck and Barton are you know, BFFs. So Barton had to address that. Barton had to address that letter, right? So if you read what he wrote about it in, well, he had to kind of do, like explain away that letter is the better way to put it. So he said what Jefferson was actually telling his nephew to do was Christian apologetics. That's what Jefferson meant by that. That it was Jefferson instructing his nephew in Christian apologetics. I mean, you can't read that letter and get that from it. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But that's how Barton explains away that letter in his you know, discredited Jefferson book.
There's a lot of twisting of the truth from people who just won't accept the truth when it's plain. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, and Barton's the worst among him. I mean among all of them. And you know, his book on Jefferson is just like I say, you know, I'm writing a series of seven books, one addressing all the lies in each chapter because it's, you know, like he's got with the thing with the you know, the converting the Indians, okay? The big quote now, the thing that they're using for that are these quotes, like where Jefferson was writing to corresponding with various missionaries who were going among the Indians. Okay, so Barton and the other revisionists are now using this as this is proof that, you know, Jefferson was trying to evangelize the Indians. In truth, what those letters were about was that Jefferson was trying to collect Indian vocabularies. Jefferson, with his interest in languages, wanted them written down before they were lost to history. So those letters, if you read them in their entirety, what he was sending to the missionaries and to anyone else that was going to be encountering Indians was what he called vocabularies. They were books that were like listed like a bunch of vocabulary words and then had a blank next to them to fill in the translation in whatever language. So what he was doing was he was sending these vocabularies, blank vocabularies, with the missionaries to write down the words for him. So yes, he was corresponding with missionaries to the Indians, but it had nothing to do with religion. It was to get them while they were there doing their converting or attempted converting, if they could get him the vocabularies.
Right, he was acting like an anthropologist.
Right, and it's the same thing he did with the Indian school, the Indian mission at William & Mary when he was governor of Virginia in 1779. He also was on the board of visitors of William & Mary. And they had an Indian school that was set up by a private donation from the estate of the scientist Robert Boyle called the Brafferton Institute, and to teach Indians, to get Indians to then go back to their people and be missionaries or whatever. And the school was like a total failure, right? They had to actually kidnap or buy six kidnapped Indians from the tribes that had kidnapped them to be the first students. Okay, so when Jefferson got on the board, he was abolishing all religious, the professorships, the divinity, and everything. But he couldn't totally get rid of this Indian school because it was in the charter of the of William and Mary. So only the Virginia legislature could get rid of it because it had to be a change in the charter. So what he did was he turned it into an anthropological mission. So there is a quote from him saying about the missionary going out, whatever, and Barton uses this, but it's out of context. What it is where Jefferson turned this into an anthropological mission, but he still called it a mission, and he still called it the Brafferton, whatever it had to be called, but he turned it into the Brafferton, quote, missionary would go and study the Indian cultures and send stuff, especially to do with the languages, back to William and Mary to be collected there.
Chris.
So it had, again, nothing to do with religion.
Chris, Tim Wingate here. Would you say that some of this behavior by Jefferson in his later years is indicative of what he put in the Declaration of Independence, especially, specifically, the last he has, the argument against the king, where he says, "He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions." Sounds like he had a definite negative view of Native
Americans.
It's
hard to tell with him. It's like the same thing with the contradictions with, like, slavery, with Jefferson when he wrote about the Indians. Because in some ways, some of his writings, there were things he did that you could tell Jefferson, like, respected them and their culture and this and that. And then in other ways, sometimes he'd write stuff that was like that. And it's kind of hard to pin down. It's just one of those contradictory things, like, and also, you know, think about it. He's writing the Declaration of Independence. You know, it's like, he can't really say that, you know, okay, the king is, like, sick to the Indians on us, and, you know, it's bad because, well, you know, they do have an interesting culture, but, you know, they're attacking us. So he kind of had to say, make it sound pretty gruesome. I mean, you know, I mean, so it's good. I wouldn't put too much stock in that because of the point of that document was to make everything sound as bad as possible.
Okay, I was just curious, just throwing out something, you know, that I'd had people question and act negatively toward Jefferson because of that one phrase, and I've often felt the way that you did, is that he was a complex man, like many of us, with multiple contradictions.
Yeah, and you got to look at, like why he was writing. But then, like, you want a really interesting one? The abortion plays into this. That Jefferson thought it was, like, quite sensible that the Indian women, they had ways through whatever herbs or whatever to bring on an abortion or a miscarriage. So, and that the Indian women who had, you know, the jobs they had to do during certain seasons of the year, that if they got pregnant during those seasons, it was inconvenient, so they would, like bring on a miscarriage, they'd abort the baby. And Jefferson seemed to have absolutely no problem with that. So, like you know, you bring that up in the abortion debate, I bet not too many people know that.
Mm. Mm.
Good point.
And there's also a quote from Benjamin Franklin about abortion, right? He wrote under some pseudonym, and he seemed to be more in favor of than against. Did you ever read that?
Which pseudonym?
Oh, I can't remember. It's been, I read it in a biography.
Oh, this wasn't just the Silence Do Good letters?
Yes.
I'd have to go back and read that because, I mean, all of those, some of them were, they need to be carefully read because some of the stuff was, like, sarcastic and satirical and if you quote, you know, look at any one little thing from any of those letters, sometimes it can be, like, not really what he meant, you know. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
one
yeah,
of those
yeah.
where I wouldn't comment on that without reading the whole thing.
Yeah, the biographer said that this doesn't necessarily mean that he was in favor of abortion. I'm just saying that the passage itself certainly wasn't pro-life.
And they didn't. And, what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, I think the first abortion law in America wasn't even passed until, like, something like 1828. And even then it wasn't, I can't remember exactly what it was. Not anything like what you'd think of today. I mean, you know, and there were
the
no
medical,
like
the medical association, because they were getting freaked out over all the midwives and everyone taking their business.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I got one more Jefferson quotation to share, and once again, if you want to call in, we got a Jefferson expert here. Suddenly and surprisingly, that's Chris Rota. Rada. Okay, Chris Rada. And you can use our payphone, which is what we hope you do, 914-338-0452. But if that's keeping you from calling, call 888 238
8529. And I saved this quotation for last because it proves that Jefferson thought that at least part of the Bible is nonsense. He wrote, it is between 50 and 60 years since I read it, referring to the book of Revelation, and I then considered it merely the ravings of a maniac, no more worthy nor capable of explanation than the incoherences of our own nightly dreams. End quote, and that is to General Alexander Smith, dated January 17th, 1825. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the book of Revelation, I mean, there's a even, well, you need to forgive me. I am just so out of it after getting here late. What's his face? Martin Luther. There was a big debate about even including the book of Revelation in the Bible because the authorship isn't even, you know, confirmed, and there's two different Johns. Tim was laughing there. He's trained in theology. What do you say about that?
Oh, no, it's just, it's, yeah, the book of Revelation is or John's Apocalypse or whatever you want to call it, is one of many books that almost didn't make it into the New Testament, and there's a number of books that should have been made or should have been put into the New Testament because they're quoted. They're quoted as supposedly being accurate, but yet they're not included. So, I mean, the whole canon issue of the scriptures is a big one. Jason and I have tried to tackle it on a little bit on one of our podcasts, but it really is a very large issue. But, yeah, Martin Luther, at least he came forward and was right, you know, questioning that.
Well, I'm wondering if Deborah might be confusing the debate between the eastern half of the church and the western half of the church, because when the canon was being formed, I am a former Eastern Orthodox priest. I'm excommunicated right now because of a letter I sent to the bishop. It was a great letter. And anyway, what became the Eastern Orthodox Church didn't want the book of Revelation in it, and what became the Roman Catholic Church didn't want the Epistle to the Hebrews. And so there was a little bit of compromising going on. At least that's the way I remember my seminary training.
Yeah, but that's long before Luther.
Did you ever hear of Luther not wanting the Book of Revelation in, Tim?
Yeah, I came across that along with a number of things. Some of the, you got to realize, these guys that, when you get into really studying the Protestant Protestant Reformation, or I should say the Protestant Reformation, a lot of these guys, the process of saying, no, Rome can't be right, and Luther in his 95 Theses really brings up some issues. And once these guys started thinking, actually, and reasoning, actually, about how Rome could not be right about all these various issues. And remember, Luther wasn't the only reformer at the time. There were a number of people who really started to question. And many of them continued on with the questioning, and it eventually became the Enlightenment. But you had he did break some grounds, and he did he ruffled a lot of feathers. Let's just put it that way. And he definitely had Luther had a negative attitude toward the Jews as well. In Germany specifically. So you know the guy wasn't perfect, obviously, but he did start that process which we're all talking about, and that is questioning. And having reason be our guide rather than just dogma or doctrine.
Hey, I got a caller named David, and he wants to pick Chris Rada's brain about the relationship between Jefferson and Masonism. David, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, would you please share what you just told me a minute ago?
Yes, I seem to have some place in my mind. I have so much stuff in my mind about deism and atheism and religion. Thomas Jefferson was a Mason.
No.
Is that correct?
No, as far as I know, he wasn't. There's no evidence that he was.
George Washington was a Mason. though.
Washington was, and a lot of the others. Franklin was, Jefferson. No.
I can't see Jefferson going through
but Jefferson wasn't much of a joiner, you know. I mean, he was kind of a. I mean, like I don't think he had anything against the Masons. I know he had a lot of friends that were Masons, but there is no evidence that he was.
Well, I
Joseph Smith and the Mormons was.
I was going to say the same thing. The Mormons, Joseph Smith was.
Hey, I found that letter, by the way, that I was just looking for.
Okay, why don't we hear it after David just finishes
Okay, because I'm getting a soda anyway, so yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways, David was saying that the Masons have some kind of teaching that has to do with Jesus and stuff that has to do with astrology, right?
Well, yeah, I see that the Masons knew they have their whole idea of masonry come from Egypt, from Africa, from Africans. And so being that during that time, around all that time back there where the Masons and the presidents and Washington and all those people, I can't understand why Jefferson wouldn't know the same thing that Washington knew. And the Masons, they were all friends and relatives. I mean, not relatives, but so if they knew about astrotheology, they knew that all the religious talk was just about the stars. That's what the Egyptians and the Masons got it from the Egyptians, that the whole religious thing was about the stars, the heavens. It wasn't anything about a human being, Jesus Christ, or a human being. It was just about the Son of God, S-U-N, not S-O-N. Does that make any sense here? I mean, maybe I'm
wrong. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit earlier.
Really is this really
Bob
Peter
Bridges.
Joseph fighting there? Is that really Peter Joseph, the Zeitgeist guy?
Well, Zeitgeist does cover it, but Bob Bridges was on earlier, and he mentioned that he doesn't believe that Jesus was a historical person, that he was actually concocted based on a bunch of astrology and mythology that preceded him. And I mentioned that Thomas Paine seems to have been of that belief too. Any comments on that?
Well, I'm of the same belief. Somebody who's very good with that type of stuff is a Tyria S., also known as D.M. Murdoch. Look her up on the internet. She has got fantastic research on that subject. And it delves, I think that Zeitgeist went into that a bit, but she goes much deeper.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm well aware of Acharya S., and she is amazing. I mean, she has opened my understanding up to all of this a lot, and she's really worthwhile to check in out. I mean, she has a few books out. I have a few of her books. But it's really interesting that you're speaking about deism, and, you know, it's just hard to believe in deism when, you know, there is really no evidence for a God, and deism, and Thomas Jefferson, yeah, I mean, he seems to, you were talking about the school for the Indians. I mean, now we're finding out that the school for the Indians was a bad thing for the Indians, and if he was connected to that,
those schools for the Indians were much after Jefferson's time. The ones what you're thinking of, the ones where they forced the Indians into schools, the Christian schools, the Catholic schools, and all of that. That was and the government schools. That was late 1800s.
Well, I mean, any of it at all seemed to have been bad. You know, I don't understand. If he was connected to any schools for Indians, and
he wasn't.
But you sound like he was ambivalent about whether he okayed it or not. You know, I'm not sure what you were saying there.
No, he really didn't do anything. The first act that was passed by Congress to have anything to do with Indian schools, apart from in treaties where the Indians wanted schools or had schools already of their own and whatever, was the first act of Congress was 1819. That was after Jefferson and Madison both, and that was when they were trying to there was a push to teach the Indians agriculture to get them to settle in one place rather than being hunter-gatherers. That was the government's interest in it.
But then the Indians already knew how to. I mean,
no,
already...
you know, the Indians weren't big farmers. The Indians were hunter. They roamed and hunter-gatherer people. And what the government wanted them to do was get turned to farming, because if you're farming, you have to stay in one place to wait for your crops and all of that, and then that would keep the Indians from traveling and being,
well,
I
thought Indians planted corn.
Well, they did. No, I'm not saying they didn't. It just wasn't that there was more of the hunter-gatherer culture than a agricultural culture. I'm not saying it was entirely, but that the government's idea was that if they were settled on farms, that they would
take more of their land, huh?
And also, by agriculture, I don't just mean crops. I mean raising livestock, so they wouldn't be going out to hunt. They would be raising livestock like white people.
I don't know. I think
all after Jefferson's time, pretty much. There was a little bit during Jefferson's time, but it was 1819 when that really started.
Yeah, well, there was one of these discoverers said that when they got to the New World here, the Indians had more of a culture and more food and everything, more than the Europeans had. So I don't understand what you're saying now.
It wasn't the same everywhere. There were different. I'm not saying they didn't farm at all. Yes, they farmed. I mean, it's a little complicated to get into all of this, but there was a push by the government to encourage agriculture among the Indians to get them to settle on farms.
I understand sort of what you're saying, because my ancestors were Iroquois Indians from up north there, and mm-hmm. I understand part of what you're saying. I don't want to go into it, but I really believe that Jefferson was a deist, but my whole discussion here with deism is he knew what he was doing when he taken all of that stuff, that hocus pocus, out of the Bible, and he gave it to people so that they would not believe in the hocus pocus, but they would be able to control the thoughts of these people, in a positive way, because religion is a negative thing to control the people, I believe. And so, I've been looking...
I think Jefferson tried to keep what was good about the Gospels and get rid of the bad. Religion can be negative and positive. He was just... He hated the negative, and he liked the positive, and if he was going to convert the Indians to anything, it would be to believe that Jesus was a wise teacher who taught stuff like, love thy neighbor as thyself.
Right. See, now that's my thing. I believe that he knew that this whole religious thing was taken from the Egyptians, and it was translated to a European audience, because that's why they had the black Madonna and the black Jesus.
I honestly, reading all Jefferson's writings, I can't think of a single reference to... that would back that up, that him thinking about Egyptians or anything like that. That's just not something that comes up in his writings.
Well, no, maybe he didn't.
I've always been curious what he would have written had Darwin's theories been around during his time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, since we've got Darwin Week coming up, I mean... any thoughts on that from the deists about what he would have, how Jefferson would have perceived evolution?
No, because that becomes theology. It's all theory.
Yeah.
There's no proof to it.
You can get a clue from what he did about geology, though, because there were the competing theory, the big and other theories at the time that were the evolution debates of the day. They weren't about evolution, but look what he did with geology. There were two competing theories about the age of the Earth and how the Earth was created, okay? So when he was founding the University of Virginia, he didn't want to take a side of either, okay, because the evidence just wasn't in yet. Now, they indicate that he didn't believe the Earth was only, 6,000 years old or anything like that, because both of these theories were were saying it wasn't. It was older, okay. And then you also had what they called the doctrine of the races was a big debate back then, okay, which was the were all men descended from Adam and Eve, or were there distinct races, the Indians, blacks, whites, the Asians, whatever, distinct races. He took the side of that they're distinct races, okay, which is that was as contentious as the creationism evolution debate today. So, but scientifically, and also because of languages, he looked at, figured it out by how languages evolved and how could you have this language being older than that language and this and that if the story of the Bible was true and how people migrated and all that, it couldn't be possible. So if you look at things like that,
at Babel, if it all happened at one instance, the Tower of Babel, then all the languages should be the same age. That's
well, no,
insane,
but
right?
he was looking at the Indian, like the especially like the American Indian languages and whatever of looking, and this was part of his study and why he was so interested is how did certain areas end up having similar words and other Indian languages end up having no similar words, where if one language came from another, you would have similarities. I mean, he really studied this crap, okay?
Well, that's where astral theology comes in, because it was all from the ancient aliens.
Exactly.
Ancient aliens, there we go. Giorgio, man, my hero. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I found this letter that this is the one that really, really settles what Jefferson said he believed and didn't believe. It's the letter where Jefferson is to William Short. I was right about that. And I'm just scrolling down to it here because I accidentally scrolled away from it. Oh, man, after all that time of finding it, I accidentally scrolled away from it. Hang on a sec. I will.
Where are you looking for that? I want to point out that Jefferson tried to base all of his beliefs on reason, and so he was very scientifically minded. And I am convinced that had he studied evolution as presented by Charles Darwin, he would be a firm Darwinist.
Oh, yeah, he definitely would. That's what I was saying with the other the other examples of big scientific debate versus religion debates that were going on in his day. He took the side of science when it conflicted with the Bible. He took the side of science. So he definitely would have, it's a sort of a given that he would have taken the side of evolution. Anyway, here's the letter.
It's a given
where,
to us, but not necessarily those wishful thinkers that you're talking about earlier. Who wrote that book that quoted Louis Lamar or something like that?
Oh, Louis Lamar, David Barton? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a given to us, but not to the David Bartons of the world.
Yeah, right? Here's this is the one where Jefferson says, you know how they're always quoting that letter where he says, I am a Christian, but then they cut it off before he says what he meant by that? Okay, this is the letter he wrote to Short where he said, I too am an Epicurean. Okay, I consider the genius genius, not the imputed doctrines of Epicurus, as containing everything rational in moral philosophy which Greece and Rome have left us. So he was as complimentary and as believed as much in the doctrines of Epicurus. Okay, so now in this letter he says makes reference to that he doesn't believe everything in the Bible, and he puts an asterisk, and he says, for example, this is what he says in the note at the bottom that the asterisk goes to, the things he doesn't believe in the Bible. The Immaculate Conception of Jesus, his deification, the creation of the world by him, his miraculous powers, his resurrection and visible ascension, his corporeal presence in the Eucharist, the Trinity, original sin, atonement, regeneration, election, orders of hierarchy, etc. So basically all of Christianity. This is what Jefferson said, and this is just for example, and has an etc. after it. Okay, this is the list of things that Jefferson flat out said he did not believe. Okay?
But he believed in slavery. He believed in slavery, though. But he believed in slavery.
What does that have to do with this?
He was a moralist, but he believed in slavery.
Yeah, he was. He was no one's saying that Jefferson was perfect. No one is saying that. No one is saying that Jefferson was perfect. And he, my understanding, and Chris can correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that he originally pushed for an end of slavery in the Declaration of Independence, but he couldn't get everyone on board with it, and so maybe he just wasn't.
He waffled, though, after that. He really waffled. There were things he had a big window of time where he could have freed his own slaves that he didn't. He had, nobody can justify what Jefferson did as far as slavery. Barton has a chapter in his ridiculous book trying to say that, where he actually says that Jefferson, you know, was not only against slavery, but thought blacks were equal to whites. That's a bunch of bull. He did not. Okay.
But at least at one point he was on board with the idea that when the country started there wouldn't be any slavery. But then he obviously kept the slaves. Is that correct?
Yeah. But he also tried to introduce a couple things in the Virginia legislature. But this was early on. Now this was when he's like in his 30s. But then after that he really stopped. And then he had this idea that. When people were getting into the whole colonization thing of like the founding of Liberia, whatever it was they founded to send slaves back to
Liberia.
Africa to form their own, yeah, right. So Jefferson's idea was to that he thought, and he was probably right on this, that they couldn't just free all the slaves. Because they'd end up, there'd be all sorts of bloodshed between whites and blacks. I mean, look what eventually happened in the South, but he said that would be impossible. You couldn't just free all the slaves all of a sudden and have the whites and blacks mixing. What his idea was to give the freed slaves their own state, okay, far enough west of where there were white settlers, that by the time white settlers reached that far west, the blacks would have their own, they would have built up their whole own communities and all that state, that they would have businesses and all of this, and that by that time it would have made things more equal and there wouldn't have been a problem. And it's, I mean, actually was not that crazy an idea,
yeah,
that well, they would have been economically secure. They would have been, it would have given the time for, you know, the black people in this state somewhere out west to be like, that's their state. And when white people started getting that far west, they would have been basically dependent on the black people who were already there and had settled that state. But that, of course, never happened. I mean, it was that was his idea, though. I mean, he was thinking along those lines.
It sounds like Palestine today.
Well, no, it wouldn't have been like Palestine. I mean, it would have just been, it would have given allowed the time for tensions to die down, okay, between and I think Jefferson put it something like the blacks that were still mad at the white masters, and then the whites who didn't want the blacks to be free, okay, if they had immediately freed the slaves and all the white people and all the black people were in the same place, it would not have been pretty, okay? But if the blacks were moved to given their own state, it would allow probably a generation or whatever before the white settlers would get as far west as the black settlers already were.
Well, weren't there some black Panthers that wanted to have part of the United States given to them? I seem to remember that, like, in the early 70s. Some African Americans thought it'd be great to have like their own part of the country where there weren't the racial tensions in mixed areas.
Well, that's a stupid idea now. I mean, when Jefferson proposed it, it had a reason. Now it would just be
You also have to
remember,
I mean,
put all the religious right people in their own states and separate the country by crazy religious people.
You also have to remember the time that Jefferson existed. during those early 1800s. Wilberforce hadn't even, it wasn't until 1833 that the English abolished slavery. And there was a whole change in thought that was developing throughout Europe, especially in England and in the United States. And there, this is such a large issue that you can try and reconstruct what Jefferson may have thought or may have did, but it all is a moot point because he did what he did.
Right. And also
he
personally, he could have freed a lot of his slaves. He couldn't have freed all of them legal reasons, and you'd have to economically support ones that were over 45 or under 18, whatever. But all of the slaves he had 200 and something slaves, all of the slaves that he had, he could have freed a good number of them in the late 1700s, and he didn't. So there's no justifying that.
Yeah, but then he also had the choice to put his foot down and tell the southern states, if you're not going to sign the Declaration of Independence,
right,
then fine, we'll go it alone. And
right. Well, you had to do it. In the Declaration of Independence, there was no choice but to take that out, because the southern states never would have signed it. So, obviously, in that case, there was no choice. You know, that had to come out, or it never would have been signed.
Yeah, the point is, we're still ending up with the recognition that Jefferson was a complicated person. He wasn't perfect, and he had contradictions. So what? He's just like just about everybody else. We do the best we can in the time that we have, and we move forward.
Yeah, Jefferson could have done better. I personally think he didn't do as bad as some, but he could have done a lot better with, you know, freeing his own slaves. But then you have, like, David Barton, you know, with his whole chapter in his book where, like you're saying, it's complicated, and it is. But any reasonable person looking at it would say it's complicated. David Barton takes this, you know, totally one-sided view, most of it made up, of that Jefferson was, not only was against slavery, but thought black people were equal. I mean, that's like really stretching it, because there's Benjamin Banneker, who's a black guy.
I hate to interrupt you, but we only have less than 3 minutes in the show, and I really want to thank Chris Rada for joining us, and Bob Bridges, David, Deborah, Tim Wingate. This is Jason Nex thanking all of you for listening. And next month, on the first Monday of the month, at 7 p.m. Central Time. No, 9 p.m. Sorry, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll have another show. I get confused because I live in Central Time. It's 9 p.m. And we hope you'll listen again. You'll tell all your friends. Feel free to email me at jason@deism.com. That's jason@deism.com. And remember that God gave us reason and not religion.
A man cannot serve two masters, so it is either reason or the scriptures. Arthur Schopenhauer.
I'm not an atheist, and I don't think I can call myself a pantheist. We see the universe marvelously arrayed and obeying certain laws, but only dimly understand these laws. Our limited minds grasp the mysterious force that moves the constellations. Albert Einstein.
Are we a Christian nation?
We hope that you enjoy this presentation. To learn more about deism, please visit www.deism.com. That's www.deism.com. And visit goddiscussion.com for the latest church and state news, articles, and opinion. Again, for more information about deism, visit deism.com.
The comments and opinions from the various hosts on the God Discussion broadcast are respected but do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of other hosts and or GodDiscussion.com.